Beware, witches, wizards, and nomads alike. You've apparated into a storm of spoilers. This week, we're returning to the wizarding world of J.K. Rowling, but not for a play this time. We're on the hunt for fantastic beasts and where to find them. But wait! This isn't just a new wizarding movie, it's the beginning of another decade of wizarding world developments. Strap in, embrace your magic, and don't suppress anything or we'll have to murder your Obscurus. Let's Revelio together! Accio Episode!
You're an interesting man, Mr. Scully. Thrown out of Hogwarts for endangering human life.
That was nice, then.
With a beast. Yet one of your teachers argued strongly against your expulsion now. What makes Albus Dumbledore so fond of you?
Hello and welcome back to Storm of Spoilers off-season tour. My name is Dave Gonzalez and my Patronus is a chow dog.
My name is Joanna Robinson and my Patronus is a Manx cat.
And I'm Neil Miller and my Patronus is a black swan.
Ooh.
So it's basically also Natalie Portman. So
or, is it Mila Kunis?
It can be either or both. I'm good with it.
Both at the same time is what I would go for.
We are, of course, returning to the magical wizarding world of J.K. Rowling, which we, I think, kicked off our off-season tour with the Cursed Child play, which was, we're nice. We're doing our first second visit to a fictional world that is not the world of Game of Thrones or a crossover episode with comic book properties. But first, Joanna, did we get some reviews? We had a Westworld episode. You think that would have, like, give us some reviews?
We did get some reviews.
All right. Yes.
I'm going to read the negative one. Just to make us all feel great. Tiresome. 2 stars by Antonio of Fleabottom. This is a chiefly about Game of Thrones review. The show will never be good enough for them. We all know to book readers, the books are better. And for being such experts, they really aren't informed on the books like they would make it sound. Talking about how Bran is a three-eyed crow, in what world? It's canon that he is Bloodraven. Joanna just hates on the show at every opportunity. If a female character acts like a man, it's conforming. She acts like a lady, would need in evil times, it's disturbing. A Song of Ice and Fire is full of strong female and gay characters, but they are novices in reading the books that they can't see them and thus hate on the show because of it. They do cover casting news, essentially looking for something else to find displeasing about the show. All in all, an unsubscribe. Try Radio Westeros or History of Westeros or Ball Move for quality Game of Thrones pods. Thanks, Antonio. I can
We're missing up. Gay characters? Wait, what gay characters am I missing?
I don't know.
I feel like when we have a gay character, it's like, hey, look at that. And then, you know, if it's just a lesbian kiss, we're like, that's not gay. But otherwise, like, I take umbrage with the fact that I've missed anything.
Neil, do you know what Antonio's talking about in terms of the books? Like, is he talking about Daenerys, like, having sex with her handmaidens? That doesn't count. Is he talking about?
I have no idea. I really honestly just think this person is trying to start a fight between us and some of the other Game of Thrones podcasts, which I'm ready for, obviously. But, yeah, I don't. Sorry. We like the show a lot.
We
podcast about it.
I'll read a positive review to balance it out. This one's from Direwolf number 9. Direwolf number 9 writes, great podcast.
Oh, that's good.
Four stars. I love the podcast, love the spoilers. Hosts are very fun and knowledgeable. Though I avoid political discussions, in light of current events, it is relevant. Enjoyed the South Park and Doctor Strange episodes. Joanna, please continue to be a social justice warrior.
The end. Yay! I'm a fan of anybody who's a fan of our South Park episode.
I would encourage everyone to just keep engaging. Don't avoid stuff. It's just take it head on. It'll be okay.
For sure.
So those are our reviews for this week.
Continue to leave reviews so that we could discuss them amongst ourselves and make ourselves better or feel better about ourselves. Meanwhile, Neil, in the land of Game of Thrones, have we received any ravens from our, I'm sure, really dusty citadel at this point?
Yeah, it's, you know, the citadel, from what I understand, is being kept kept up for the most part. We keep getting ravens, so we have to assume everything's fine there, just similar to the way the show has never gone back to Casterly Rock. We just have to assume that it's there, and it's all good, and somebody's running the show. But we'll find out soon enough. Anyway, two big things on the docket for Game of Thrones news this week. One is that there was a small bit of footage sort of released. It's in the coming in 2017 preview that HBO has aired. It's really just three shots.
Would you call it 1.5 seconds of footage?
It's 1.5 seconds of footage, yes. It is a shot of Sansa in the snow with a coat. In the north, it is a shot of Jon Snow clearly still at Winterfell talking to probably Sansa in the snow in the north. But most interestingly, a shot of Arya on a horse wearing dark colors in what appears to be the north. So confirming the thing that we kind of knew was coming, which is Arya migrating to the north, which is cool. So, you know, Arya gets another change of clothes. That's the biggest news here.
Yeah, and, Arya gets a coat. Yay, Arya.
Yeah,
finally. I mean, we already kind of knew that Arya, you know, she said she was going home last season. We've seen Maisie Williams in like a northern costume and all that sort of stuff and set photos. But I was thinking about it this week as I was writing up that 1.5 seconds of footage, which is challenging to do. And I was thinking, just how excited I am at the prospect of Arya not having a dumb House of Black and White plot line to deal with this season. Like, no matter what happens up north, it's going to be more interesting than that. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Cool. And then the second one is sort of production spoilery. So if you are super sensitive to that, skip ahead to when we start our discussion. The time code will be in the show notes. We start our discussion about Fantastic Beasts. But there is more information about a battle that will happen. And the way it's being sort of worded, at least from some of the reports I've been seeing from the guys at Watchers on the Wall, etc., is that it appears to be a siege at Highgarden. And there are Lannisters who have shown up. And there are Tarly soldiers that have shown up, and they appear to be working together, and they appear to be under siege by the Dothraki and potentially Daenerys and her dragons. So my guess is that it is a siege. The Targaryen army. Wait, who would be attacking Highgarden? The Lannisters, right?
Right, and the Tarleys are supposed to be allied with House Tyrell, but it looks like they might have betrayed them to ally with the Lannisters.
Right, because we know that
Randall Tarly, you old bastard. Yeah.
Randall Tarly, who is a dick, and his son Dickon, whose name is Dick, are both there. Yes. So it appears as if they go to have some sort of siege at Highgarden, and Daenerys shows up and messes up everyone's shit, I guess would be the appropriate term. So that appears to be what they've been filming lately. And beyond that, everybody's in Belfast. with the whole cast. Everybody's there. So we will have more in very soon about all the things Game of
Thrones. Yes, before the end of the year, for sure, my friends, we will dedicate an entire podcast to Game of Thrones again. We promise. When?
Watch this
Who knows?
Space.
Yeah. Keep listening.
The other thing I will say is that this is only Game of Thrones adjacent, but it was announced today that Lin-Manuel Miranda is producing a TV series of Patrick Rothfuss's Kingkiller Chronicles, which, you know, I know we've heard this a million times that, like, this show could be the next Game of Thrones ever since Game of Thrones premiered, like the Shannara Chronicle or the Shannara, whatever that was called, or Outlander, et cetera, et cetera. But Kingkiller Chronicles really does have the best potential to be another Game of Thrones. There are only two books so far in a proposed trilogy, but it's a hugely popular series. So that's good and exciting news. There you go.
Yeah. Go Lin-Manuel Miranda.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And a trilogy is much easier to finish than seven books if you're already two in.
Right.
Or at least one would hope.
Right, if you're an author, even if you're a slow writing author,
you heard me that. Yep. You hear me, Patrick Rothfuss. Stop making mead, and finish your third book. I'm just kidding. Your mead looks delicious. So
he could do both. I'm just saying. Yeah. I had to write a Game of Thrones gift guide, and the book set is still only has five books in it. So let's keep it moving along, like we will after this break. Welcome back to the magical world of 1926 America, folks. It's Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, the first of a proposed five movie series. I'm sorry.
It's hard to even get through that.
It's just sometimes that, like, the air rushes out of me when I stare down the barrel of that.
The thought of, like, five movies is exhausting, let alone actually having to.
Because they're going to be every other year, right? So it's going to be a decade of this?
Yeah, I mean, it's like essentially we like all well like enjoyed being in the slow burn of Harry Potter, and then the books stopped publishing, and we're like, at least we have the movies, and the movies came out, and the movies weren't that bad, and we had like everything was great, and then stuff sort of like quieted down for a little while, and then Pottermore bubbled up, and then we got this play, and then they're like, hey, we're gonna do Fantastic Beasts. It's gonna be this fun thing based on this weird thing she wrote for charity about all the different magical beasts and the nope, it's part one of a five-part series about Grindelwald. Deal with it.
And I mean, you know, if they go a decade, that means that if they wanted to do a Cursed Child movie at the end of that decade, Radcliffe and Watson and Grint would all be closer to the right age, right?
I mean, possibly. Just... Not only that...
I'm just saying, but maybe make it six movies in your head instead of five. Or maybe seven if they want to do Cursed Child Part 1 and 2. It's Grindelwald. Warner Brothers
is this,
Warner Brothers is this
the podcast episode where Dave storms off?
Yeah, this is a storm off of spoilers. This is where I finally break Dave. I've been working on it. I've been chipping away. Warner Brothers wants some of that Johnny Depp franchise money. And so it seems like, I mean, I don't know if Eddie Redmayne's going to be the center of this series. It might very well be Grindelwald, as Dave says, the Grindelwald show.
Well, I mean, that's the interesting thing that I think will allow us to talk our way through Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them is to this, in terms of other franchising that we've seen, which is something I talk about in this week's Fighting in the War Room, seems a lot more focused because it's a prequel five movie series, which is like far beyond the usual things you could pull with, like, even a prequel trilogy where you're filling in, you know, certain important gaps that we know. Here we know some events from ancillary material, basically nothing that was actually mentioned in the movies from this time period except for like little flashes. And so instead we have like this long stretch of time we were going to be filling in this story, but unlike things like what Ivan Reitman's trying to do with the new Ghostbusters franchise, where it's like, we could have movies of Ghostbusters everywhere, or even Star Wars, where it's like, we're going to do spin-offs of all these like little stories. This seems like a very focused march towards telling this story of the wizarding world, which is interesting, and I guess makes sense now that Joanna brings up the cursed child thing, because you'd think if you're building a franchise, you would want to explode the universe out as wide as possible. But I still think, like, yeah, we are looking at like a Grindelwald or a Dumbledore or a first, you know, wizarding world war, which ironically is going to happen during the second actual world war movie. Which, I don't know. That's what it seems to be laying the track for if we consider this movie being the first step in five movies, which I think it needs to be, because otherwise I don't think it holds up great as a single story called Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them. And maybe that's where we should start instead of like diving right into the deep end. Neil, what did you think about Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
I thought it was okay. Right. Period. Full stop. You know, here's the thing. So the Harry Potter movies, previously up until the last few, always felt, like kids' movies. You know, it was, this is Alfonso Cuarón doing a very weird kids' movie. And then it got very dark and very serious at the end, which I guess it had to because of the very dark and very serious content. This, however, is the first time that I felt like I was just watching a sort of adultish drama that also had wizards and shit. So it felt like a much more mature story for them to be telling. It was really cool to see it exist in a period piece, because I don't know, it's just that the idea of magic floating around sort of in between the two world wars and that time period is really interesting, and the little references to Newt Scamander working with the British Army in the war is kind of cool to me. Like, there's a history, an unraveling and an intersectionality with history that I thought was really fascinating. I also found, from a technical perspective, the effects were fantastic. And the sound design of this movie was the most impressed I've been with some of the Wizarding World stuff thus far, especially some of the design around, you know, when they do their little wizard jump, where they jump from one place to another, a little transport.
They're apparating.
That thing. Yeah, that
the
one.
Wizard jump.
The wizard jump. That really, there was a more of an impact to that than I had ever really thought of with the other Potter movies. And it was a little bit more visceral. And I think that it just shows that David Yates, mm-hmm. who directed this and directed a bunch of the Potter movies, the last couple, really good handle on the world, the mechanics of the world, the way it should look, the way it should sound. So I think that really makes me feel okay about the fact that they're going to make more of these, as long as they can kind of get the story right and as long as they can make the characters interesting, then I think that they will be fine, because from for all intents and purposes, they've got a really good handle on how to build this world out if they want to. So it's okay.
Nice. Joanna, I'm just going to go straight to Joanna. I'm not going to respond.
Okay. I thought it looked really good. You know, I don't like CG creatures that much, and I thought even I thought the CG creatures were pretty rad. I think, you know, I saw it late. I just saw it yesterday, so it's like, what, 2 weeks, 1.5 weeks into its run. And so I'd already heard a lot of opinions, and one of the things that kept sort of coming at me was a bunch of people were like, there's such great chemistry between the four leads, the four heroes. And I just did not feel it was... I mean, I thought Dan Fogler was great, and I thought Alison Siddall, who plays Queenie, was fantastic. I thought Eddie Redmayne was making a lot of choices, most of which I agree with. It was a very mannered performance. And then I did not get at all what Catherine Waterston was doing as Tina. It didn't, like, I heard her described as like a dame with a lot of moxie, and like, I just didn't see the moxie. I mean, like, I kind of like that this is our female lead. She's like, not just because she wears trousers, but she also seems like, I don't know, reserved and kind of like a little stern, you know, like obviously in contrast to Queenie. I think that's kind of a cool lead character to see. I didn't see like the chemistry between all four of them really zipping the way that sort of some people sold it to me. However, Colin Farrell, and I was already spoiled on what was happening with Colin Farrell in terms of I would brace for the disappointment of him turning into Johnny Depp at the end, but I thought Colin Farrell was really extraordinary in this. I thought he was fantastic.
It was real creepy.
He was super creepy. I think his, like, this is no, like, faint praise. I think his spell casting was the best I've seen in the Harry Potter franchise. And that's even, like, I mean, Ralph Fiennes was up there, but Ralph Fiennes also had, like, fake fingernails and a robe to work with. Like, Colin Farrell had beautiful sleeves on his coat, but he was still just with so much flourish and intention. And I was just like, man, I'm really feeling like the spell casting is going. It sounds so stupid, but that's how I felt about it. I thought Ezra Miller, Ezra Miller as Credence and Eddie Redmayne as Newt Scamander were two of like the most interesting, I would say, physical performances I've seen in a long time. They were both like, there was a lot of work that went into what they did, you know, and it worked on and off for me. And I guess the last thing I want to talk about is, you know, J.K. Rowling wrote this. I don't know if she did it intentionally, but between Rowling and Yates is British, right? I think they accidentally knocked off Doctor Who a little harder than they meant to. Newt Scamander with his coat and his wand that's like, you know, sonic screwdriver basically, and like, you know, hopping into a thing that's bigger on the inside and all this other stuff, like, just, and apparently Matt Smith auditioned for the role of Newt Scamander. It was a lot of Whovian, and that's not necessarily a bad thing, but I think the fingerprints are clearly there. So my overall impression, I enjoyed it. I think I got too excited for it. Like I had really low expectation for Fantastic Beasts, and then a lot of people I really respect thought it was amazing. And so then I accidentally ratcheted my expectations up, I think, too high. And if I had gone in with my original expectations, I think I would have been far more delighted. And I still enjoyed it. I enjoyed it. Okay. I'm done.
I do like what you said about Colin Farrell. That makes a lot of sense. Like there was not only was he very creepy and just sort of twisted in a way where I was like, this guy's not good. Like right. He's not a good guy throughout the entire movie. But yeah, the physical performance, it's almost like when you're, and I think this goes a little bit to what I was saying in that when you're making a slightly more adult film, you have real actors.
Yeah.
So you're not relying on kids to do all of this stuff. And I think that was always my favorite thing about the Harry Potter movies was the real actors. When the real adult actors showed up and did the magic stuff, it was really great. And I think that that's true in Fantastic Beasts because it's all adults. There aren't any, well, there aren't entirely any children.
So. There aren't any important children that are
right. No core characters
that
are children.
You forgot about Esmeralda. No, he's
not. Oh, the Credence Clearwater Revival.
I got Clearwater Revival.
Dave, what do you think?
I sent you that interview really early on where I was like, I'm surprised that this interview's out so early, considering
insane.
It spoils the entirety of the film.
Yeah. You and I
so
were
you heard it was
spoiled.
Yeah. Yeah. You knew it was really good, but you also knew how it ended.
Yeah.
Did that change your absorption of Fantastic Beasts?
I have to say, I was hesitating to bring this up because, you know, I don't want to have a spoiler fight with Dave. Because I feel like I'm edging more and more as I go on this path of like, maybe there are spoilers we should leave in the dirt.
Oh, and not you're getting old is what you're saying.
I'm getting old. I'm getting elderly, and I'm not as into... I'm still into spoilers. I still think it's fine to think that they're enriching. But yeah, this interview that Dave is referencing, was it on Muggle.net? Is that what it was?
Well, a whole bunch of people had it, but I think we had the leaky cauldron version that didn't have some of the edits the other places had.
Yeah, so everyone like... So there was basically what happened is there was a roundtable interview conversation with Esmeralda. Oh my god, I can't. I'm just gonna say Ezra.
The Justice League episode's gonna be great. Oh my
god. There's a round table. I've never had this problem before. Maybe I've never said that.
Baflex and Esmerella off to save the day.
Okay, so good old Ezra Miller was giving a round table.
You can just call him Kevin if you want.
Yeah, we need to talk about Kevin and, or the Flash. Anyway, Barry was giving a roundtable interview with a bunch of journalists, and all the ones worth their salt went home and edited it. And one other place, I think it was Muggle.net, not Leaky Cauldron, but I could be wrong. Anyway, one of the Potter fan sites printed an excerpted interview, but then also printed the entire transcript. And within that transcript, Ezra Miller says, you're not going to print this until after the movie, right? After the movie comes out, right? And the journalists in the room respond, yeah, of course. And they printed it anyway. And it was all about how, like, Johnny Depp is Colin Farrell. It was all about the obscurist.
He's the obscurist.
Yeah, he's the obscurist. Like, it was all in there, you know. And, like, Dave and I were like, holy shit. Like, oh, my God. And
this is why people don't trust the media.
I know. I was just like, I that fan site is not invited back to any more junkets. So I read that. So I don't know. I don't know if I would have been more, but I don't know the answer, but I will say
the movie does a lot of too much. The movie and the screenplay, which I read because they published on Pottermore, and I'm like, yeah, I want to see how this turns out. Both does a lot of work to throw you off the trail of Credence being the one, narratively. Both Yates pushing in on the other girl. I forget what her Modesty.
I was about to say Chastity.
Chastity is the other one.
Okay.
And sort of framing her as the obscurest center, but it was weird watching it, knowing that it was going to be Credence, and also seeing how the movie was tipping its hand in that direction, which for me would be my argument towards execution, despite spoiler, which is that I like this movie. I think the performers are good. I think the screenplay is one of the better first-time screenplays, you know,
yes, that
in terms of getting its what it needs to get across. But I think David Yates kind of whiffed a little bit on directing. There's sort of things like, I know it's really cool that we get to see all of New York put together and everybody sort of lose their memories through rain and whatnot, but that's the first time we really go high and wide above New York City. Like even Newt's way in is through customs and underneath overpasses and through magical veils. And I sort of felt like I like Wizarding New York, but it wasn't portrayed well on screen. It felt like they were operating to little sets.
Can I ask you a question about the rain?
Yeah.
So everyone outside I get, and then like some of the people inside I get, like I guess the guy in the shower. Like, I guess there's rainwater in his shower. I don't know. But, like, it seemed like they were showing people, like, drinking tea and forgetting. Like, if you got in contact with any water in New York City, you would forget. But, A, I'm not sure that that's how water works in New York City. And, B, like, what about the people who, like, didn't drink any water or take a shower that day? Or, you know, like, seems risky. Is that a stupid nit to pick? I'm sorry. It was just like,
well,
when they were showing people in the rain, I was like, what about the people inside? They're like, we got you covered. And they cut inside. They're like, here, these people in the shower and drinking tea, they too are forgetting. And I'm like,
Yeah, I think it's sort of like how if you're standing in a kitchen and you smell shit, it's because there are tiny particles of shit in your nose, even though you're far away from the bathroom. Like, things missed. Like, I crazy, guess. Man.
Yeah.
This got real specific.
Yeah.
Well, I just always like to tell people that when I'm like, I'm a little freaked out. This bathroom's so near the kitchenette. And they're like, why? I'm like, because when you smell it, those are particles. So just heads up, everybody.
Can I? Two other things.
Yeah.
One
please.
Is, I really, really love the acronym MACUSA. That's sounds like Yakuza. It's really fun. I really, really love it. Nomadge never got there for me. Like, no matter how many times they said it in the movie, I was like, this still sucks. and they should have just kept Muggles. Sorry. So,
well, lucky for you, I hear the second movie takes place in Paris, so I think we'll be going back to some Muggles. Oh, great.
The Muggles. Okay, and then the other one is, I think it's great that, oh shoot, what's his name? Ron Perlman. When Ron Perlman's character walked in, I didn't know Ron Perlman was in the movie, but when that character walked in, I was like, I'm pretty sure that's Ron Perlman. So that was some like good face matching CG that they did on that character. Who did Dan Hedaya play? Because he's listed as a character named Red, and I don't know who that is.
Red would be the goblin who's the elevator operator
that Tina's a friend with. What a weird part to get Dan Hedaya for when he had like two lines, right? That's weird. Dan Hedaya, well, maybe, of course, of Clueless fame. So
right, Cher's dad.
Cher's dad. Okay, that's all. That's all I wanted to say about voice actors.
I will say this. I want to go back for 2 seconds to the idea of the spoiler. Mostly because it's that's our thing.
Right.
But I did not know that beforehand. Right. I didn't know that.
You didn't.
Nobody
know
told me. Okay. Good.
Right.
So I didn't know any of that. I will say this, the Johnny Depp thing, the Colin Farrell morphing into Johnny Depp thing, totally saw that one coming. I was like, eventually, only because I knew Johnny Depp had to show up. And then I was like, oh, it's probably that guy, like halfway through.
It's too late in the movie for them to introduce a big dad from the outside.
It's too late in the movie for that guy to just show up. Although I will say, before that, I was convinced that the Obscurus that was kind of tearing up the city at the beginning of the movie was something that Johnny Depp was controlling, which was not the case in the end, because they made a point of showing him, like showing how bad he was at the very beginning of the film.
You know what's kind of fun is you see the back of Johnny Depp's head. That's all you see, right? At the very beginning of the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And then like really soon thereafter, the introduction of Colin Farrell is the back of his head, and they have similar undercuts, similar haircuts.
Right.
So like knowing, like I did, that they were the same character, I thought that that was probably intentional and kind of a little cool visual thing. Anyway, sorry.
Mm-hmm. Well, I will say this, the kids thing I didn't figure out until late, like which kid was the Obscurus.
Oh, nice. That worked.
That worked pretty well. Cause I was very convinced by the film that the girl, Majesty or Matrimony
Chastity.
Or
Modesty,
Chastity or Modesty. Okay. Whatever Modesty. Her name is.
Her Majesty Jackson. Okay. Sorry.
I was convinced that she was, protecting her brother. Cause at some point, didn't they say that they were both adopted together?
Like yeah, was all actually, the children that Mary Lou has are adopted.
Yeah, but that those two were actually related.
Oh no, Modesty came from the house that she's hiding in at the end, and Credence came from a mother that we don't learn anything
witch,
more about.
Probably.
Okay. All right. But yeah, so I was convinced that she was protecting him, and then it turned, in a way that I figured out like 2 seconds before it happened. So
can we talk about what a waste of Samantha Morton that was? I don't know. Feels like a waste.
Wait, where was Samantha Morton?
She was the lady. The second single lady.
Oh.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not
great.
Didn't see that one.
Terrible wig.
I mean,
awful thankless role. Okay.
She's probably gone, but she's the one that connects to the Pottermore backstory. She's the Scourer descendant. So the whole law that Rappaport's law that means you can't talk to Muggles and you can't interact with them comes from her descendant tricking a poor little witch woman into giving up the location of the Makuza. Decades ago. Anyway, but yes, it's weird that she was only in it for the brief period of time to sort of die as an abuse martyr, but is a legacy character. So I don't know. Had as much to do as Zoe Kravitz did in this movie, maybe? Zoe Just to Kravitz be a moving picture? Movie? She's the she's the photo. The Lena...
Lena Lestrange.
Lestrange, thank you.
Yeah.
Oh,
Zoe Kravitz.
That's so funny because I did not recognize her. And when they showed that photo, I was like, if that character is important, it would be an actor I recognize. My bad. Sorry. I do like you, Zoe Kravitz. You're great and dope.
But I mean, so I guess we could.
Do we think that character, the Lestrange character, is going to show up to complicate love triangles in the future? Or
I mean, I think she has to. I don't know if it's going to be complicate love triangles because I'm not sure how much this series is going to deal with that. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel like Newt's kind of over her by the end of this movie. Like they've obviously broken it off for some very specific reason, maybe because she's already starting to go evil.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's going to be interesting to see. We know, I guess, from going forward, that the next movie probably going to take place in Paris, and Rowling says that the final movie takes place in 1945. So it's like we could almost guess that we're going all the way through the duel between Dumbledore and Grindelwald. So assuming that we're like building there, I mean, I don't know how dark sidey we're going to get, but it seems like if we're talking about threads this movie throws up to let another movie catch, that this might be like the dark Harry Potter saga with Buster Keaton-ish Newt Scamander like saving animals around the periphery, I guess. That's a weird thing. Why is he the hero of this movie? It seems really weird, and he seems really passive, and it's not like he can't be the only person that knows a revealing charm at the end of this film.
Yeah, wouldn't it make more sense for Tina to be kind of the hero,
yeah,
and then have her go and be immersed in, like, her follow Newt to Europe and become immersed in the Hogwarts battle? Like, I don't know, maybe Grindelwald escapes, because now he's, you know, they're not going to be able to hold him, obviously. And he goes to Europe to cause trouble, and she goes because she was there. She stopped him the first time. Maybe, like, that's a better thread, because you're right. I don't get why Doctor Who has to show up and catch
magical
beavers.
Creatures.
Well, yeah, that's the thing, is like the when I was watching it, I was like, okay, again, we've got like a smart woman who's like second fiddle to a magical boy, basically, right? And like, I like Newt. I like that Newt is a pessimist.
Can we call him Quirky McQuirkface?
Quirky Mc, I can't understand some of your line readings, Eddie Redmayne. Open your goddamn mouth. You're an Oscar winner. So, yeah, the, what was I going to say? Having her be like very much second fiddle, like helping him but not really helping in the final, like helping but not getting to do the big thing in the final duel. And it does make more sense to me, since she's the one who actually worked with Graves before. Like, if Graves was presumably once upon a time not Johnny Depp, then she would be the one to like figure out that he's acting differently than he used to. And be the one,
yeah,
to do, like,
I wish
rebellio,
there was a scene.
You know?
I wish there was a scene where at least somebody was like, that's weird for Graves, or, like, something. Because I want there to be a world where Graves is alive at the bottom of a chest,
yes,
somewhere, Moody-wise, and he's the one that comes back and is like, fuck this. America's my thing I gotta save.
I love Colin Farrell, and I really want him to come back. And they did leave the door open for that, presumably, but...
I think there's a Fantastic Beasts 2 where we see Tina again, and she's either on the trail or has found either Graves or Credence, who I do not think is dead at the end of this movie.
Right. Yeah, I agree with that, with all of that. I think that Queenie and Kowalski... is that his last name?
Yeah, Jacob Kowalski.
Oh, good. I was like, please don't get the wrong Polish last name. Okay, so Queenie and Kowalski.
McCloskey? I don't know.
Are Esmeralda, are great comedic relief sidekicks. I think they're great. I think, but once again, I think our two leads, I think Eddie Redmayne just needed to dial the quirk down from 11 to like 8. I liked his physicality, and I like Eddie Redmayne, I guess, gave an interview where he said he wanted Newt to only seem confident with creatures and really deeply uncomfortable around humans. And I like that. I like that idea. But I think he took it to a weird place where, like, I get, like, not being able to make eye contact or whatever, but he was always, like, almost smiling in a way. I don't know what it was. I usually really like Eddie Redmayne, so I don't know what it was that was so weird to me. But if he could have dialed it down from 11 to 8, and then if she could have bumped it up, bump up the moxie a little bit, you know, and then meet somewhere in the middle, I think we would have had a better leading pair.
I want a character on the good side that seems like they know what they're doing. Like, we had Dumbledore through so many movies where it was like, at least they're being an idiot. Goddamn Dumbledore. But in this one, I feel like everybody has a moment where, like, or it's like even Newt, who's ahead of everybody in most everything, like, has that obvious line, like, it's a parasitic thing that killed a child. What use would it have? And I'm like, the audience is now ahead of everybody in that room except your evil character.
Right.
Like, I feel like I should have somebody that I'm rooting for. Like, they're in a ridiculous situation anyway. Make them smart. But outside of that, I guess it's okay that this movie wraps up in a way where none of these people could come back, or all of these people could come back, and I'd feel okay about it. I'm just not sure if that's where you want the beginning of your first, you know, five-film franchise to end up, which we will discuss after this second break.
Before we get to, like, the master plan franchising of it all, can I just say that, I mean, I appreciate that this is a more adult Potter, and Variety had an article that came out the week, the Sunday of opening weekend, where they looked at the demographics who went to go see Fantastic Beasts, and it's much older people, so it's sort of like the Harry Potter franchise, the Fantastic Beasts franchise is tracking the Harry Potter kids as they grow up. So writing a more adult set of films makes sense if you're looking to hook, you know, the once kids who are now adults. That being said, you know, I think they still definitely want kids there. The whole Fantastic Beasts sequence is, I'm sure, meant to dazzle children and sell Niffler merchandise. But the fact that there's, like, a execution scene that's, like, really, really upsetting. Like, that was really dark. Like, killing killing the senator or whatever, like, I was sort of like, yeah, I'm okay with that. Like, that happens in Harry Potter. But, like, putting your heroine in, like, a magical electric chair, that was very dark, I thought.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Real dark.
It went immediately for the dark. I'm sorry?
So is the sex rhino. That was very mature.
Oh, yeah, the sex rhino, for sure. But the sex rhino also, like, makes little kitty motions sometimes. So you're supposed to laugh at that horrified hippo.
Throbbing.
You're like, what is he going to do to the hippo?
Ugh. Yeah.
What is he going to do to the hippo?
Oh. You know.
Yeah, that's awkward in the script, too, in case you guys care. It's like, there's a hippo there, and it's like, oh, man, he just walks in right before they, like, have sex with that hippo to death. Mm-hmm. Ah, which was what was gonna happen. That's a magical death you don't want to cover up. So
it definitely is where to find the magical beasts. All up in the hippo.
From various degrees of engagement with Harry Potter lore, especially the post book lore, I would imagine. What for you, Neil, let's go Neil first. Mm. What is this series going to be about? Considering you've seen only Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them?
Well, I have two answers to this. One is what I think it will be about, and one is what I hope it'll be about, and one is very disappointing. What I think it will be about, potentially disappointing, is the Johnny Depp character, Grindelwald, and sort of him. And I didn't know this thing about, apparently he fights Dumbledore at some point. Okay, so that's awesome. Like, let's get to that. Let's get Jared Harris in there. Let's do some stuff.
Yes, I agree with that.
So cool. Get to that. Great. If it's kind of about them, like, this manhunt or this battle or this, it's going to feel repetitive because that was what Harry Potter was about. Harry Potter was about the boy who lived, who survived Voldemort, taking 8 movies to kill Voldemort. or to take him down, essentially. And so that'll feel very repetitive if it's just this one long narrative about this one bad guy and the chosen few who have to fight him. I will say what I would like it to be about is an expansion of the Wizarding World to different locales in this time period, because I think this is, they've set it in a time period where there's a lot of very interesting things happening in the world, especially all through Europe. There's a lot of interesting ideas, and this movie starts to get us toward a lot of really interesting ideas that are very relevant today, like the ideas of a, you know, otherism and sort of this, the warring factions of society and isolationism versus the greater good. And so there's a lot of really interesting ideas there that can be explored if they go to other places. So like, you know, the saying the next one's set in Paris is really cool because Paris was a really interesting place back then. It's, you know, it's okay now, but it was really interesting back then. And, you know, say they go to Germany. I want to see all the different elements, all the different subcultures of the Wizarding World and what they call Muggles, because that apparently is fascinating.
Different everywhere.
It's different everywhere. So I think if it's more of that and less about the one guy, then maybe it'll be more fun as sort of a travelogue through the Wizarding World. But my fear is that it will become this sort of same arc as we saw in the Harry Potter movies, which was fine. It worked once, but if we've learned anything in modern cinema, it's that if you keep doing the same thing with the same franchise, eventually it gets kind of boring. So
I don't know. They could just make it with a female Harry Potter, right? That's completely different.
But she doesn't. She's not the lead, man. Yeah. I don't know if you were talking about Tina, but yeah. Do I get to answer the question now?
I mean, you could take it. It seems like you're gonna push a Tina-centric.
No, I don't. Because I don't even really like. No. I'll push a Queenie-centric franchise.
Oh.
I loved Queenie. But she was great. I think, you know, honestly, if they really landed the Dumbledore casting and, like, you know, I, of course, want Jared Harris, but I don't think they're going to do that. I think, you know, Fantastic Beasts made an insane amount of money overseas. And I think part of that is, like, Johnny Depp is really fucking popular. I know he's not a big part of this movie. I know that. But, like, that's certainly a reason. Like, I think it's bullshit when David Yates is like, we just cast the best actor for the role. I'm like, no, you didn't. You look at the fact that Johnny Depp is in, like, what is it? 4 of the 10 highest grossing films of all time, yeah, star Johnny
Depp.
Like,
no, you just wanted some of that Pirates money.
Yeah, you want some of that Pirates Alice in Wonderland money, and I don't respect that. But if they somehow really landed the young Dumbledore casting, I could see this shifting to Dumbledore-centric. I don't know if Newt Scamander should be Mr. Scamander. I don't know if he should be our central figure, even if Eddie Redmayne does dial it down. But I'd follow a young Dumbledore.
I mean, there's like a fourth... Oh, there's like a fourth Hacksaw Ridge Newt Scamander at War like movie if they want to keep him at the center.
Oh
of
my
it,
god!
Sure.
So he just like levitates people over the edge of Hacksaw Ridge.
I don't want to hurt anyone.
oh my god! Now all I want in the world is an edit of Hacksaw Ridge with Newt Scamander in the role. it's too funny. Or you know, I feel like they open the door for further Newt Scamander back. Like, I was having this nightmare that, like, once we're done with these 5 films, we're going to get the Newt Scamander prequel because they were talking about his brother, about his time, you know, like, Sue, you could do, like, the Scamander brothers go through Hogwarts or something like that, you know, like, all of that is a possibility. So, I don't know.
Fun fact, Newt Scamander shows up on the Marauders map in the 3rd movie.
What?
Just on one of those like panning shots of the Marauders map.
Yeah.
Newt Scamander. Thanks, Tumblr. Like, just saying, if they wanted to suddenly be like, he had things to do in Time Turner Hogwarts all along. It's like.
Well, but I don't understand. In like the, when the kids are using it or when the, no, there isn't a flashback. So like when the kids are using it, News Commander.
It's either
there.
That or the pan during the credits. It's I haven't figured it out. I've just seen the screen cap, and I'm like, oh damn.
Huh.
It looks like it's like ornamentally amongst the things.
Huh.
But point being, like that's happened. All the bloodlines have been updated to include Tina now as Newt's partner. So it'll be interesting to see if we flush out that. I was talking to Java, my girlfriend, who, despite popular opinion on the internet, is not a cat but a person, who said that the second she heard that Eddie Redmayne, Newt's commander, had a brother that was a war hero, she's like, well, Benedict Cumberbatch can find a way in any franchise. And I was like, oh shit.
What would his name?
Little mumbly Benedict Cumberbatch, war hero's commander. But like, they could totally pivot to make it.
Eel's commander? Gecko's commander?
Oh, Gecko's commander. That would be.
Benedict Cumberbatch is.
Gecko's commander.
He's the rough and tumble one.
Gecko's commander, war commander. I'd watch it.
Oh, shit.
Fantastic Cumberbatches and where to find them.
But I mean, it is interesting to me that you know, Warner's has like poached Johnny Depp, because Johnny Depp's a Disney property, you know, Pirates and Alice in Wonderland, etc. But they're like, nope, we want some of that Depp magic. I don't know what to tell you, man. I as I said on Twitter, I didn't think Johnny Depp was that bad in his 5 seconds. I thought he was fine.
I don't understand what he says to Newt.
We all die a little? Is that what he says, Dave?
Oh, hold on. I can look up the exact words. I just got to
put it
to the thing.
Because it was so like vague that I was like, I don't understand what he's trying to convey to Newt.
Do you mean
like, yeah, I read a bunch of reviews are like, and then he says he'll be back. And I'm like, I don't think he said it.
We all die a little. Yeah, we all die sometimes.
I am your father.
They're yelling at Credence. He makes his big speech.
I'm Gecko's commander.
I'm Gecko's commander. I was always your brother. Oh, wait, no,
so you guys,
no,
we should be writing these movies.
I did like the talk.
J.K. Rowling should invite us to the UK and we can tell her what's up.
Gecko's commander, war commander. I did like the toss away line where Eddie Redmayne talks about, you know, how he was using dragons on, what do you say, the Eastern Front? I don't know. Like, that was a nice little toss away line.
Right,
oh,
like
yeah.
He was
no, I'm
using
excited
Fantastic
we're
Beasts in the war.
Yeah.
No, I'm so excited we're going to get to see what magical war looks like, because presumably, you know, not all wizards, well, maybe all wizards were against the Nazis. That sounds actually like something J.K. Rowling would do. Be like, and we weren't as foolish as you. Anyway, the line is, will we die just a little?
Yeah, I don't get that. That's nonsense.
And then the description says he is led away up and on the subway, and Newt watches, bemused.
Bemused is the expression Eddie Redmayne was wearing for 99% of that movie.
Bemused is Eddie Redmayne's middle name.
What was I going to say?
It's actually, it's what Eddie Redmayne puts down for gender. He puts other bemused.
Dave, I have to say, don't you think that the Malfoys were like fine with the Nazis? I'm pretty sure the Malfoys were like, "Oh, you think blood people are the best people? Great, so do we." Cheerio. I think the Malfoys were definitely in with the Nazis for sure.
I mean, maybe, but then you're running into this whole like Indiana Jones territory where if the Nazis forever we're trying to like poke into like occult science, so if anybody stumbled across wizards, like, wouldn't they? We're probably gonna find out, because it's J.K. Rowling making a five movie series about a culture that isn't hers, which is going to be interesting.
Well, listen, I will say that if we get further, you said we're ending in 45.
Yeah, I think we're ending in 45.
If we get to like a string of 3 movies where it's all about our heroes punching Nazis in the face, like, I will get there. I am there for it. Like,
that's also pretty relevant to today's.
Yeah, exactly. Like, I watched Benioff's and Broomsticks and Indiana Jones over Thanksgiving break, and they're both about, like, just punching Nazis, and I just missed the time when we could all agree that, like, Nazis deserve to be punched all the time, because that was a better time in our world history.
Yeah, I hope America becomes great again.
Yeah, I hope America embraces punching Nazis again.
In terms of the other thing that's sort of been retconned into Harry Potter history that this movie would have to take head on if it chose to do these characters, Dumbledore and Grindelwald have like a huge man crush on each other.
No.
So it's like the...
Oh, sorry.
Oh. No, go ahead.
So I dug into this because, as you know,
yeah,
this is relevant to my interests. And what J.K. Rowling has said on record is Dumbledore had a crush on Grindelwald. And Grindelwald didn't necessarily have a crush on Dumbledore, and not that they ever consummated anything. Grindelwald didn't have a crush on Dumbledore, but he exploited Dumbledore's feelings. Like, he gave him enough of a warm response to exploit that relationship because he wanted Dumbledore on his side. He wanted Dumbledore under his sway. And having read that as Rowling's description of what Grindelwald's MO was before I saw the movie, watching what Colin Farrell does with Ezra Miller, who is like one walking gay metaphor, watch him, like, you know, it's about child abuse. So like the comfort that he gives him is about sort of like touching and comforting an abused child. But it's also like, it's a little beyond that.
It's real sexual.
Yeah, to the point where, yeah, he's like, but if he is Grindelwald, what he's doing is he's giving this, like, clearly, in my opinion, gay kid enough, like, leading him on because he needs him for whatever he needs him for. And if he did a similar thing with Dumbledore, I think that would be interesting and heartbreaking to watch. And that's why I want Jared Harris to do it, because he's a really good crier. And so, like, if Dumbledore, like, realizes what a fool he's been to have given his heart and any power to this monster, I want to watch that, like, in a big way. So, yeah.
Yeah, because, I mean, at some point, you're going to have to deal with that head on. Otherwise, it robs that moment of its power, because it became so powerful as something that we just knew about through, like, little snippets of history from the books, that to, like, actually see it and to not also milk that angle for all it was in reality would feel like a cop-out. So at some point, you know, she's going to have to do what none of the original Harry Potter movies did, which is, like, deal with the gay subtext head-on, I would assume.
Yeah, I mean, I read some headlines, and I regret that I did not bother to click, so I don't know if there was an actual concrete quote from Rowling that I can sort of reiterate, but there were some headlines that were like, we might actually see an out-and-gay Dumbledore in these films. I don't know if that's people willfully interpreting whatever she said the way they want to hear it.
With, like, a musical number, or...?
Dumbledore,
I'm just crazy about Fox, and he's just crazy about me.
Dumbledore doesn't strike me as a musical gay at all.
I think it's more like, you know, he sees really nice socks in the mirror of Irisid. He's that kind of gay.
Got it.
Which is great. More robes for Jared Harris. Yeah, I don't know. This, I'm happy to be suddenly from, like, I was getting teased that I was back in the wizarding world and I was going to get, you know, a little bit more and a little bit more. I just feel like I was then suddenly pushed into the deep end of, no, this is the next decade of your life is wondering over these questions. And because of that, I think that was, like, so, I read reviews about what the movie was, and obviously it had been spoiled, that interview, but, like, having the movie open, both in script form and actually on headlines about Grindelwald, I was like, I was never going to get a standalone Fantastic Beasts movie. This has always been franchise theater, and I kind of wish that they'd just been honest about it, because then, honestly, I would have gotten more psyched about it. Like, I had to go back and read you know, the magical history of America again after the movie, because I hadn't been reading it to like look for ongoing threads. I had been reading it as like a prep so I'd know what the American houses are. But now I know that goddamn tree has like some Slytherin wand in it. So like we're probably going to end up back there and like just weave together the magical history of the Americas and Europe, which is great. But it's like it feels like I'm back in, you know, like I've just finished book four and I've just realized there's three more books and it's just going to be an indeterminate amount of my future. And I think I'm in for it, but I didn't get in, I guess, fully enraptured the way that the Harry Potter world was able to pull me in. Maybe by like just having a softer touch at the beginning. This one's like it tries. It gives me a cute niffler that I'm into for about half the movie. But then it
wait, which one's
takes
the
a hard turn.
The one that steals gold?
Yeah, the shiny thing. Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one.
That and the demiguys, the invisible like sloth ET.
Asian sloth ET.
There we go. I like those two characters for sure. But
I like the little stick insect. That was cute.
Oh yeah, the bow truckle. Yeah. But the movie's about an abused kid who's abused so badly he creates a magical monster. And then, you know, the most evil wizard that isn't Voldemort that we know about tries to, like, control him. And we figure out that that's what it's about in, like, the last 20 minutes of the movie, which is fine. It's just not a standalone movie that I'm going to revisit a lot. I feel I'm going to clip this movie a lot and then, you know, have the screenplay to flip through for when Fantastic Beasts 2 comes out. And I have to remember just what Jacob Kowalski remembers, which is seemingly the shape of amazing fantastic animals and nothing else.
But like what's interesting to me is like if we go forward and this is actually a Grindelwald franchise and not a Newt Scamander like franchise, it's stupid to call it Fantastic Beasts. So if you're going to call it Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them 2, or Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them : The Search for Grindelwald or whatever, then it's got to be Newt, right?
Or you get along to a beast, I guess. But yeah, I don't know. I think it's more likely to be like Fantastic Beasts and
Fantastic Beasts and Gecko Scamander War Commander.
Yeah, exactly. But I think the Fantastic Beast is going to be the part that sticks around.
Fantastic Beasts punch Nazis.
Yes!
Yeah, because Game of Thrones is just Fantastic Beasts and ice zombies. So like what? Like I feel like just Fantastic Beasts in that flourishy font will be with us for a good decade.
I gotcha. Okay.
So it'll be like Transformers, Dark of the Moon.
Exactly. And like how this new Transformers is taking place in King Arthur times for some reason. It's just the name doesn't mean anything anymore. It's a brand. But that being said, for our old school people who remember Fantastic Beasts and Where to Find Them, no, Obscurial does not appear in the original book, except it is the fictional publisher that shares its insights with Dumbledore and allows him to write a foreword according to Dumbledore's foreword. It's Obscurial Publishing. But otherwise, I have no idea where like little parasitic magic demon thing came from.
What's the
I just don't think we've seen the last of that idea because it's
evocative.
Which is like Bryan Singer hitting across the X-Men as a gay metaphor. It's like she's gonna sink her teeth into that and let the Obscurial
because it's a repression, like it's a demon born of repression basically.
What's the plural versus singular, right? It's Obscurus and Obscurial. Like one Obscurial and then a group of Obscurus. Is that right?
I think the Obscurial is the host and the Obscurus is the black thing.
So it's almost like it's almost like a demon Patronus, right? Because attached to the person and they can summon it via magic and it destroys things for them, whereas what does a Patronus do again?
it's good feelings that ward off. Yeah.
Okay. So like, an Obscurius is the bad version of that.
No. So like an Obscurial, you're right, Dave. An Obscurial is a person like Esmeralda or that 8-year-old Turkish girl And then the obscurus is the dark cloud of their repressed feelings. So, okay, got it. So, I didn't, for some reason, I didn't get that from the film, but I just read it.
The interesting debate. The interesting debate that I have been having is, does the obscurial get created by suppressing magic, or is it really a parasitic entity in the sense that it has to find someone that is suppressing magic?
Oh.
Like, are there like two or three obscurials that are just like in the world and they need to feed in order to be, because they describe it as a parasitic creature, which would imply that it also like lives.
I got the impression, based on the movie, at least based on the movie and no other knowledge, that it was created within these children who are repressing them. It's their magic when they repress it.
Right. But once
it turns into this thing.
Right. So once they've produced an obscurus, the obscurus feeds off the obscurial, but like they create it in the first place and then it becomes a parasitic relationship.
So what you're saying is that it's possible that it is a thing that existed outside of them that finds them.
That's what Dave thinks.
Well, I'm just wondering if it's right. If it's a, like an old magic thing, or if it's like, if Hermione had abusive parents, then she would have created an obscurial. I'm wondering why this isn't something that we've like, we don't see a lot, because I imagine in the modern era, there are people that want to suppress their magical abilities, but this seems like only people who are violently forced to repress their magical abilities. So I'm wondering if that creates an obscurial through like that ancient magic that is love that saves Harry in the end, or if this is a fantastic beast that like, that's why Newt's so interested in it, is like there are only a few, but when they do find it, they're so deadly they just kill these children.
What if at the end of this franchise, Newt figures out how to turn the obscuri into something good? That seems on brand for him. This is my wild speculation a decade from now, but like I agree with what you say. It seems like there is no obscurial obscurus stuff in the Harry Potter timeline, so I feel like maybe this is something that's going to be extinguished.
Do they like turn into Death Eaters or something?
Well, no, I was thinking that they turn into something good, because like I feel like they're going to be extinguished, so because to explain why they're not part of the Harry Potter lore, but it's not on brand for Newt Scamander to exterminate something. So I feel like his brand is to redeem something. Like that, like, what is it, Swooping Evil? Like, to find the good in Swooping Evil. To find the good in, you know, why else does he have one that he's studying? So.
Yeah. And that's why I think it's interesting that it shows up as the name of the publisher of the fictional book, and it doesn't show up as a fantastic beast, because maybe this is the thing that, you know, Newt Scamander, who supposedly told us everything about everything, erased something from history because Fantastic Beasts 2. Right? I'm into it.
All right.
All right. Well, at least there's something for them to explain that'll make me go back for another movie.
Yeah, and, you know, this time, what does Paris look like in the late 20s, early 30s Wizarding America?
Yeah.
Let's find out together.
Jaunty.
Jaunty. And we still have to go to Ilvermorny, which I have no doubt we'll be at, and still hope for Colin Farrell and Esmeralda coming back.
Yeah, and Zoe Kravitz actually showing up.
And Zoe Kravitz.
Top of my list is Colin Farrell, number two, Esmeralda, number three, Zoe Kravitz. Sure.
All right. High hopes for our what will be our third return to Harry Potter worlds.
Number four, Benedict Cumberbatch's Gecko's Commander.
Oh, yeah. Benedict Cumberbatch, Gecko's Commander. Yeah, you guys should definitely tweet us who it should be, if not Benedict Cumberbatch, or if it is Benedict Cumberbatch, what his name is, because I feel like that'll keep us entertained. For sure. All right, guys, it's time to peel back the veil of secrecy on what we're going to be doing for the rest of the year. Neil,
woo!
What do we have to look forward to the rest of this year?
So we've got a few episodes to announce to you guys. Since you've stuck with us this long in this episode, we're going to give you a little treat. Next week, which is the first week of December, which is also the week of my name day, We are going to be going back to the Citadel for a Neil's name day party and to talk about all the Game of Thrones leaks and all of the information that's out there. We are going to organize it. We're going to have facts and figures, and we're going to unveil the True Detective whiteboard filled with clues, and we're going to try and figure out what season 7 is all about. So that'll be fun. The following week, we're going to be talking Star Wars.
Nothing but Star Wars. If they should Star Wars, what would I do?
So yeah, we're going to talk Star Wars in advance of Rogue One. It is possible that one, maybe more of us will have seen the movie by then. So we can chat about that.
Kyber crystals.
Kyber crystals.
Or that.
then the week before Christmas, the 21st, we're going to be doing a very Storm of Spoilers holiday special, just like we did for Halloween. We're going to talk some Christmas movies. It's going to be great. And at the end of the month, we are going to do our TV year in review, which we're going to look back at all the TV shows, including Game of Thrones, maybe give away some more Georgies. We don't know. We'll figure it out. We're going to look back at the year in television. And then we mentioned Benedict Cumberbatch. Apparently, he's got a show coming back on 1/1/17, which we're going to talk about on the 4th, which is the week
good.
After.
It's
that
only
comes
been
out.
Like a month and a half since we've added Benedict Cumberbatch to a major franchise. I was getting worried that we might have seen the last of him.
Yeah, I mean, I thought maybe we'd never talk about him again. So,
it hasn't even been a month and a half. It's been like three of the longest weeks of my life.
So that's your preview for the next month and change here on Storm Spoilers.
It's going to be pretty sweet. We've been enjoying your reviews. We would love all of your thoughts on the Harry Potter Wizarding World of Fantastic Beasts, where it could go, cool names for Benedict Cumberbatch, etc. Until then, guys, where can we find more of your fantastic work on the internet? Let's start with Westworld Joanna Robinson.
Westworld Joanna Robinson. Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's just like right in front of your name now until you're wrong about something. You just got to be wrong about one thing and then we'll knock it off.
So you can find me talking about Westworld on VanityFair.com. I've got a new post going up tomorrow or today if you're listening to this on Wednesday. Or you can find me on Twitter at Westworld Joe Wrote This. Or you can listen to me talk about Westworld on the Decoding Westworld podcast.
That is great branding. Neil Miller.
You can find me writing filmschoolrejects.com. You can follow me on Twitter at Rejects. You can also get the show at Storm of Spoilers on Twitter. You can email us if you want to talk Fantastic Beast theories or if you want to talk Game of Thrones theories for next week. Email us stormofspoilers@gmail.com.
I'm Dave Gonzalez. You can find me on Twitter at DA7E. You could find some of my blogging at geek.com and thrillist.com, but I sort of went into a weird production hole, so it's going to give me a few weeks. I'm going to get back on with some Shadows of the Empire stuff for sure. That's a Star Wars reference. And you can find my podcast at fightinginthewarroom.com. And then until next week, guys, like I said, leave the reviews. I'm harping on you. Helps us find new people. I'm actually pointing the Elder Wand right now at my microphone and into your head to make you leave a review before we talk to you next week. See you next week.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
We watch, we listen.
They have no idea what's going to happen.
We watch, we listen, and we remember.
They have no idea what's going to happen.